Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 87 for April 30th, 2008. Enter the Cylon.
MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode, 87. And in a very different setting for me, we are in the new studio. This is the first show in the new studio. So expect things to go wrong. Who knows what's going to go wrong? It could be anything. I've got buttons and dials and arrays and knobs I never had before. Ladies and gentlemen, from his mother's home, where Matlock is playing in the background, if you hear Andy Griffith's dulcet tones, now you know you're listening to Andy and Notco. Hi, Andy.
Hello. This just goes to show the production values that are on this show. Conan O'Brien goes to Chicago, goes to London. I get to broadcast from my mom's house. So enjoy the special week of shows from my mom.
This actually looks like I'm broadcasting from mom's house. We're streaming video right now on Stickam. It looks like I snuck in here. I don't know what's going on.
I just got to say, I'm feeling really good today because I've seen like the Stickam when you're in the old place. And for the first time, it feels as though you're in a place that's as disorganized. Organized as my office normally is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and we have some things to do. We got some glare here, and there's a lot of. But we had our lighting guy in. That was great. I'll actually talk about that in a second with Alex Lindsay, who's also here from the Pixel Core. Hey, Alex. Came up to shoot the lighting guy talking about lighting, which was really great.
It was great. I think we got almost an hour of footage, so we're going to cut that up into a couple Gear Media Tech shows.
Yeah, I mean that was a graduate course in film lighting.
Yeah. Yeah,
totally. The lighting he did. We lost our steampunk astrolabe. Darn it! The lighting I'm sorry. I'm looking. My auction bid just popped up. The lighting he did really looked noir. It was really. I don't know if we're going to go that dramatic.
Yeah, we might not go that dramatic, but I think that it'll be nice to not be limited to just let's make everybody look well.
Oh yeah, I don't. Yeah, yeah. I mean, most television, let alone most internet TV, is very flat,
very harsh.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And people who are watching right now say, well, that's not very good lighting. Well, no, because there is no lighting in here yet. But we will have lighting. Merlin Mann, who is always well lit and always looking good, and by the way, is probably beating the pants off me at TVWeek.com. Hello, Merlin Mann.
Hi, how's it going, Leo? What's TV Week?
You didn't see that?
What is that?
You and Leo are going head-to-head, and you don't even know it.
Daisy Whitney has faced us off.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I would like to go ahead and just cede victory to you.
No, I would like to go ahead and cede victory.
Can we ask her not to do that? I don't like competing.
I know.
Guys, this passive aggressive stuff is really ugly, okay? Just hit each other, get it over with.
I take it back. I'm hot.
Hotmail web hosts gone wild. Oh. And I guess what she has is like, who's the sexiest? So it's like Jeff McPherson versus Tom Merritt, Dr. Tiki versus, I think Dr. Tiki wins hands down versus Tom Merritt. And I love Tom Merritt, but Dr. Tiki's Dr. Tiki. And then Gary Vaynerchuk versus the amateur gourmet Adam Roberts. So it's all these hosts from various, he's got the Dignation guys, Alex Albrecht and Kevin Rose faced off against each other. Poor Alex. But then you and me, it's like, we're, you know, come on.
Yeah, it's a race to the bottom.
Unfortunately, we can't tell who's winning. Look, I'm going to vote for
you. You can. If you vote, it'll show you.
Oh, okay.
No, there's no one can win this. It's like war
Oh,
games.
It's close. I'm winning 57 to 42. I'm like Barack Obama in North Carolina right now.
Excellent. Well, I'd like to congratulate you in advance, Leo. You're a handsome man.
No, clearly, you're much better looking. And by the way,
you're oddly lit right now, but you're a very good
she picked a picture from my fat period, which is anything in the last 10 years. So I was hoping she might go back farther. That wouldn't be fair though, because you, my friend, I'm looking at your geek pictures. Mm. You're good. You're a good looking fella.
You think so?
Yeah.
I had a lot of work done. That's very costly, what I've had done.
To reverse it? To reverse the effects of good looks?
Well, as you know, I have a hump that I have to have treated on a regular basis.
Because it keeps coming
not
back.
Not my original nose. This is, I mean, actually, it's a nose that I had to, I'm leasing. So I can't even like really kind of go nuts with it.
You can't do anything because you have to give it back.
No, I mean, I got to keep it clean. You never know. I got to keep resale value. So yeah, no, it's an uphill battle, Leo, and it's not getting easier. Gravity and entropy are putting a hurting on me.
Let's talk about Mac News. Enough of this. Mr. Scott Bourne could not join us today. He's doing something fancy. Oh, he's meeting with Apple about Aperture, right?
He is crossing the Atlantic in a self-powered auto dirigible.
Oh, my goodness, Andy.
It's one of those Brian Fossen sort of things.
You've gone bad on us again.
Oh, damn it.
I just
I've always been bad, Leo. I try to clean myself up for public broadcast.
He's gone bad.
Got a kind of old school Cylon sound to it. That's sort of cool.
Yeah.
He does. You sound like a Cylon. Do you have red lights going up and down your back?
No, but if I were anything, it would not be a sucky TV show. Thank you very much.
Oh, there are some people who actually like BSG.
Okay, but they, don't they like really quickly say not the Lauren Green version?
Oh, not the Lauren Green version. No,
talk about the version with the hot women on it.
Yeah, the cool Cylon chick.
You know how to really get like a Battlestar Galactica fan like really really angry? Start doing Quickie impersonations.
Doesn't he sound like a Cylon?
So you deliberately confuse the show with Buck Rogers? Is that the idea?
Exactly. And then they get all flustered. They don't realize that you're just trying to get them flustered.
Yeah, you have to just go, I love Battlestar Galactica. Bitty, 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 bitty.
Itty, bitty, bitty, Starbuck.
There is a Starbuck in Battlestar Galactica. Is there a Starbuck also in the Flash Gordon?
No, it's a very phallic little robot. It's a very disturbing robot.
I remember him.
Yeah. Merlin, there's Starbucks everywhere, Merlin. I don't know if they've been around.
I learned there's 7 Starbucks in Petaluma. I just learned. We got to do something about you, Andy, before we go forward.
I'm doing this thing again. I'm swapping.
Let's listen to Matlock for a little bit, though.
Yeah. I'm just a simple country lawyer.
Jane,
the guy who was in here doing our lighting yesterday, I was really thrilled to hear did Angela Lansbury's lighting for Murder, She Wrote. And since Angela and I have the same neck, it was really good to hear how he handled Angela's neck. Basically, all the light comes from above.
I loved you in Sweeney Todd too, Leo. Is that any better?
That's so much better. You know what? This is going to happen periodically.
Okay.
And I'll just tell you, the keyword will be Cylon. And then
believe it or not, I have now taken my Nikon camera and basically anchored it in front of the cable just in case I'm like wiggling it or dislodging it or something like that.
Yeah, it might be something like that. It sounds like USB garbage.
Okay.
So good news for our friends in Canada. Ted Rogers, who is about 100 years old and runs Rogers Communications, which pretty much owns everything in Canada, including all the cell phones, has announced in a weird announcement that iPhone's coming to Canada. We're thrilled to announce that we have a deal with Apple to bring the iPhone. I can say that now that I no longer work for him. To bring the iPhone to Canada later this year. And unaccountably, the unofficial Apple weblog has a picture of Mr. Rogers next to this. It's not Mr. Rogers. It's Ted Rogers. We can't tell you any more about it now, but stay tuned.
They mistook Fred for Ted.
That's an easy mistake.
Now it says that it's the plan, I guess that's suggested, I guess, that people are expecting is 25 megabytes of data, additional fee for texts, and $97 a month Canadian.
That comes from the National Post. The problem really in Canada, I think the thing that held it up is they didn't have any flat rate data plans. And the iPhone eats data like I'm eating a chocolate cookie right now.
Yeah.
Good. So they need to do something. Is that a good deal? 25 megs? How long would it take you to go through 25 megs?
A couple days.
Yeah. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't understand why they can't get over it and just
flat rate.
Move to the future.
You're gonna make a lot of money on this thing. Might as well accept that and not try to be extra greedy.
Right.
Did they say how much after you go past 25 megabytes? Did they, well, I mean, yeah. They don't know. I mean, it's not, Rogers hasn't said a word. Rogers may well do a flat rate plan. They have to.
I think that the, isn't that what happened in the UK is really they just realized they had to move that direction.
Yeah. So no, really Rogers has said merely we're going to have it before the end of the year. They don't, we don't know anything else.
Right.
I hear Matlock.
Which means you hear dead people.
I hear Cylons and
now,
Matlock.
Now do we think that AT&T is really going to drop the price of the iPhone?
That's the other rumor, right?
Right. Yeah.
Tell us about that. What is the deal?
Well, the rumor is that, of course, the rumor is now building that we're going to have in June, we're going to see a 3G iPhone. I mean, that seems to be what a lot of people think is coming. And the rumor is that AT&T is going to cut by as much as $200. You know? So basically, they're doing what they're doing with all the other phones.
Subsidize it.
Which is subsidizing. Yeah. So you'd be able to buy a phone. If that was true, you'd be able to buy a phone theoretically for $199. For the 8 gig and a 16 gig for $299.
But maybe that's for the non-3G version, right? And then they go back to the premium price for the 3G version.
I don't think anyone's going to want the non-3G version once it comes out. Right. I mean, I think what they're trying to do is just go for the they realized that to expand that market to the next level, I think that they have to lower that price, and AT&T has a vested interest in expanding that market.
You bet.
So it looks like
Now the question. But now they have to get around Apple's whatever the Apple's covenants with them are, though, right?
Right. I mean, I think I think it's in Apple's best interest too.
So you think Apple said we'll take a smaller cut as well as you, or do you think AT&T says, "Well, look, we got to sell this phone. We're just going to cut our half."
I mean, they're making $100 a month from you, so giving you $200 off is not that big of a deal.
How much does Apple get of the iPhone? How much of Apple?
They say 9 to 25%
of the monthly.
Of AT&T's,
monthly. But I thought they were getting 100% of the iPhone profit. Is that not the case?
Oh, I believe they are. Yeah.
That's my question is, Apple must be involved in this.
But AT&T could take the loss. I mean, Apple's probably going to have to be involved as far as agreeing to it. But AT&T could take the loss. They could just say, you know, we're going to pay Apple the same amount we were paying for the phone.
That's what the thing I'm saying. If Apple was making $500 a phone, and AT&T cuts it $200,
costs them $200.
But costs Apple $300. No, it costs Apple the money though, not AT&T.
Because Apple gets the same. AT&T could make an agreement that just said we're going to pay Apple the same amount per phone. We're going to sell the phones at a loss. Right.
But that's my question: Apple, is if they were paying them 100% before,
they right? And then they can still pay. The thing is if they're paying them $500. Let's say they're paying them $500 a phone right now. They could pay them $500 a phone.
Oh, just pay, oh out of pocket. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Just take it out of pocket because they're going to get it right back. I mean, in a couple months it's evened itself out, so they can do it. They could do it at a loss. I mean, that's what they're doing when you buy a phone. When you get a phone for free, they're giving it to you at a $100 loss or a $50 loss or a $200 loss or whatever it is, knowing that they're going to get it right back within the first quarter.
Flimsy rumor time. This is a flimsy rumor portion of the show.
Yes, yes, but it would be exciting. I'm waiting.
Other flimsy rumor from the Apple Insider that Foxconn Electronics, which builds the phones, has been selected, or builds actually, I think they build iPods, has been selected to assemble the company's upcoming 3G handset volume shipments beginning this June. According to the Apple Insider, 24 to 25 million phones.
I think that's pretty flimsy.
Well, you know, this is that same source. This is that Commercial Times report. That's a lot of phones, 24 to 25 million. I can't believe that.
Yeah, I 3 million, yes, I can. I mean, the 3 million for June, there was another rumor. I don't know where that showed up, but 3 million for June, I believe, 24 to 25 million, I guess maybe over a year or two.
That's the life cycle. Yeah, it doesn't mean we want them all now, but we guarantee this many.
Right. That's believable. If AT&T,
did they miss their 10 million? Well,
they still have months left because the thing is they have to. They said by the end of 2008.
Okay, are they on track?
I think they're probably. Yeah, I think they're on track. Especially if they're going to release a 3G phone in June, they'll be way on track. They'll be they'll surpass it.
Merlin's not saying anything. Are you bitter about our rivalry? But Merlin, is that
I didn't want to say anything, Leo, but yeah, I'm carrying around a little bit of a burden. Yeah. I mean, it felt like you've got the money to really get fixed up, and I'm sitting here.
You can come here. You can come here and sit and drink with us. Your home away from home. Like you got the wife, you got the kid. This is what people with kids do. They create a little playhouse.
I don't know anything about these things, but I'll ask a question for the other dumb people. So 3G is good because it doesn't have to be with AT&T, or because it's faster, or why do we like 3G?
Faster.
Okay, so 3G is what Sprint has or had, right? So when I had a Sprint phone, that really flew.
And Verizon. Although some say 2.5G. 3G is HSDPA. That's AT&T's high-speed network. And
3G seems to me like a smart decision for AT&T.
It's a must.
Because people will blow through more data. I mean, I don't know. It's just you can charge higher usage fees.
But wait, isn't it flat rate data? I mean, do we care?
Oh, that's true.
Flat rate data now, but they may charge more. I mean, if they said my bill went from $100 to $120 and I could have 3G, I'd be like, thank you. You know, it wouldn't be a problem.
Having something to get people to upgrade to, I guess. But so this doesn't change anything about locking. This is still just an AT&T deal. It's just a question of it's a faster way to get around.
Yep.
Although more and more of the countries they're selling into demand unlocked. Australia is going to be unlocked, according to, again, flimsy rumors.
Which means that if you buy one there, you could theoretically bring it back here.
Yeah. Theoretically? I mean, it seems like you basically would just carry it here.
Fly to Australia to get a phone doesn't seem like
Well, theoretically, as in I haven't done it yet. But
Now, this rumor about cutting the price of the iPhone does at least come from Fortune. I mean, it's somewhat of a credible source.
Yeah, this isn't...
They say the new iPhone will be 2.5 millimeters thinner. I had thought a little thicker. And
battery life as well.
Yeah, battery life. Yeah.
And that's why they avoided it.
Go ahead.
And?
GPS.
Well, that'd be huge.
You want to really kill your battery.
Yeah.
Turn on HSDPA, Wi-Fi, and GPS, and don't make any calls because you won't be able to.
That's just a flimsy rumor, though, right?
Well, it's flimsy Fortune rumor. I don't know. Fortune, I think, is credible, isn't it?
Well, that seems like a lot of stuff to be draining your battery.
Well, that's what the Nokia N95 did, and that was really a problem. Although the Nokia N95's battery was, I don't know, it was small. And then they came out with a later model that supposedly had better battery life. They fixed the firmware. I think there's tricks you can play. Mm-hmm. Boy, I tell you, if they do GPS, and this is June, right? Exactly when the SDK comes out. So this kind of does make sense. If in June they announce when the games come out or whatever it is, if June they announce a slate of really good games, GPS, HSDPA, and $200 less, that jumpstarts sales. That becomes the Jesus phone all over again. It's the second coming.
And I think the thing is I think that something that Apple depends on a lot is the people like me will go, oh, it's time to buy a new iPhone. So half of the people who own one now will upgrade, which of course they'll count as new customers, but half of us will just say, oh
yeah. And I would also apply a little bit of the famous Alex Lindsay anecdotal evidence here and say that my sense is that there's a lot of kind of pass around within families with Apple stuff, and I'd love for my wife to have an iPhone. I mean, if I get a fancy new one, I mean, I'd love to give her my old one. She doesn't want an iPhone. She doesn't need an iPhone, but I'd love her to have one. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to get rid of your old one. You're probably just going to find a different person in your home to keep it on that same account.
I'm trying to pry my wife away from her razor. That phone is
you don't want her to shave anymore?
No, the freaking Motorola phone. That thing is the
it's
phone
pretty crappy.
Hell.
Yeah.
And so I keep on trying, you know, so when this comes out, yeah, having an extra iPhone floating about, I'm hoping that she'll be tempted.
Well, but, I'll be tempted, and I gave my iPhone to Dane. I mean, I haven't used it in a while, and I'd be tempted, especially GPS. Think of all the things you could do, all the applications. Have we heard any rumors about cool apps that are going to come out on the iPhone in June?
All of them.
Well, I can tell you, it won't be Flash.
200,000. There's 200,000 people, you know, developing stuff. I mean, it's going to be big.
Yeah, the people are pretty excited because I can't tell you how many conversations I've had that started with, okay, but I can't talk about anything I'm doing on the iPhone because I'm under NDA. But let me tell you everything I'm doing about for the iPhone.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great amount of excitement. But the biggest amount of griping is that there isn't enough exposure to the internal hardware. I know at least two or three people who want to write a really good camera phone app for the iPhone, and they're complaining that they just don't have that level of access to be able to tell the iPhone camera, please damp down the exposure by a stop or two, and do that kind of stuff. So that's why I'm openly skeptical of GPS being in the next iPhone. I think it's going to be more like I find it easier to imagine GPS connectivity and an Apple branded
like little stick GPS that you could buy for $70 or $80 externally. But that'd be exactly the sort of thing where developers would need to have more information than simply where am I to build the best applications.
Don't you think, I'd love to see things like Spore on this. Don't you think this is going to be the greatest gaming platform ever?
Let me tell you, I have lots of respect for my grandfather. He was a proud, hardworking, kind-hearted immigrant, and I loved him dearly, respected him dearly. But every time he operated the TV remote control, he would like be pointing it and jimbling it and up and down, left and right, because he felt that that would somehow affect the TV. That's the only time that I ever thought, my God, I'm embarrassed to be related to this. And that's what's going to happen to the iPhone community once developers start like wetting their underpants over trying to figure out a way to avoid having people actually tap a button.
I want to move my... Yeah, I love it. What? This will be great.
Here's iPhone bowling. Now, it's going to be hard for you to keep an eye on the screen while you're swinging it, but you'll agree that the gravimetric accelerometric paradigm for the bowling Skyrim makes it almost like bowling, except for the fact you've just tossed your iPhone into a screen.
Look how popular the Wii is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, you can keep your eyes on this thing that's like mounted on the wall of your living room.
Oh, that's a good point.
I've been holding the iPhone in my hands trying to figure out how to do gaming on it, and I'm really, really happy with the idea of control buttons on the top corners of the screen where my thumbs would naturally sort of hit. I'm just not sure that I'm absolutely certain that the first games are going to really overuse the motion sensor, and then the next generation of games are going to be the ones that use it only when appropriate, and there'll be some sort of informal standard of what you can expect for a gamepad for the iPhone.
I have a crazy iPhone-related wonder aloud thing. My family and I were just traveling for the last week or so, and I found myself frequently using my iPhone and my Garmin Nuvi a lot because we'd rented a car and we were driving around and going places we were kind of semi-familiar with. And I found myself using this combination of the iPhone and the GPS a lot. And I mean, just kind of apropos of the rumors you're talking about, whereas I used to be very obsessed with things like to-do lists and how that would work on a Mac, right now I'm thinking a lot about, from a user standpoint, what you could do with local stuff. And sort of like, I really like that on my, it's not perfect, but on my Nuvi, you know, the GPS, I can say, okay, based on where I'm going, find a nearby gas station, yeah. Right? And then save that. I can do stuff like I can say, okay, based on where I'm driving right now, show me the next Popeye's fried chicken that I'm going to pass and stuff like that.
It really gets you excited about GPS when you do stuff like that.
Well, there's two things. There's two parts to this that I think are interesting, though. The first part is like as a user, I had at least half a dozen things where I was like, okay, I got to return the rental car. I'm sick of doing that, you know, fill the tank for $76 thing. I want to do it myself, da da da. So, you know, I made sure early on GPS, add a gas station and stuff like that. What I'm thinking is like from a business standpoint, I don't know. I don't really keep up with business stuff too much, but it seems to me that local is still hot and it is still huge. And you look at something like Yelp and you look at the success people are having and the use that people have of that. And I just wonder, I'm just going to toss out my crazy Merlin's crazy Google thing he always talks about. Like, but what does it look like at some point when you figure out how to do an iPhone-like approach to local stuff and getting further integration with Google to find local businesses and then be able to serve ads like that are so contextual that they don't seem like ads on an iPhone. So I don't know. I'm just tossing that out. I'm just really interested in like, from a user standpoint, with or without GPS, what could the iPhone do to be my complete on-the-go vacation device? And then second, is there any untapped business opportunity?
Oh, yeah.
Given how huge search, how huge local is and how badly most people are doing it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the key to Google's Android. It's all about local search.
I'm pretty sure...
Go ahead, Andy.
I'm about to say I'm pretty confident that the humans would ruin it.
As always,
that either the company that's trying to make money off of pushing these ads would either screw up, but it'd be too tempting to say, yeah, there's this really great family style independently owned diner two blocks away, but you know those folks at Applebee's, their money is so delicious.
No, but those folks, I'm sorry,
their money's good too.
Those humans would be Google, and what they would be doing is pulling out completely textual information based on what they could gather about your location. So what I'm getting at is that the last mile where people are, you look at something like City Search, which is like, oh my gosh, it's like, you know, 1998 called and they want their Seinfeld episode back. You know, it's like City Search. Wow, is that the best you can do with like local? It's like, what happens though if that last mile becomes, okay, well, I will buy the equivalent of AdWords, but I want it to appear on people's mobile phones when they're within 5 miles of my.
Oh, get ready. I mean, get ready. This is the next big thing. And you see things like Places and Brightkite, these new Web 2.0 sites that are all about your location. The minute your phone knows where you are.
I think when you, the thing that I think I've talked about on this show or one of the other shows is that once you start having that GPS really active and everybody's got one, I mean, what I'm interested in is building tours. You know, I go up to some site and I say, you know, I want to do a Civil War battlefield tour, and it is giving, it's literally giving me a voiceover while I'm traveling, you know, and building me up towards
you know,
it.
The Nuvi can do that right now. You can get those for the Nuvi. It's kind of cool. Do you have a Nuvi or a TomTom? What do you have?
I have TomTom.
The Nuvi has this thing. You can load these up. You can buy these and load these up, and it uses waypoints to go like, okay, you're passing Andersonville. It's very sad.
Does it talk to you, really? And it'll give you a little travelogue?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Between the video store and the mini mall, that's where 8,000 Union soldiers died. I'm interrupting you. Go.
That's fine. Go, Andy.
Well, I was going to change the subject to a different application for GPS. That would totally sell me on the idea of GPS for the iPhone. But
well, I mean, yes. This is the thing: is they've got to sell people on GPS for the iPhone, and then they can sell you like crazy on local location-based ads.
Well, not even necessarily that. I mean, what would really sell me on GPS for the iPhone would be if there were a mesh-based iPhone travel network, where by virtue of the fact that I've got an iPhone in my car, and some guy that's 8 miles ahead on Route 128 has an iPhone in his car, both of them are reporting back on how fast we're going, that I can get real-time traffic data everywhere there's something. I can look ahead 10 miles and find out, oh, that's red.
That pulls in like a social network thing too, where you could say,
but it's
like,
automatic. You don't even have to know these guys. It just senses this.
Maybe I'm cynical. It's not just a case of like an advertiser trying to steer people towards the person who give them the better ad money. But I'm talking about, again, companies that would try to game the system. That's what we see with Google Ads. That's what we're seeing so many different Google searches, where if you try to look for restaurants using Google, it's a better example. Try to find like a hotel room or try to find like a tourist attraction. You will not get until you turn to page 8, 9, 10, or 11 of the search results. You will not find a result that wasn't gamed.
I just think we're at an inflection point. I think we're at that point of that hockey stick, and we've seen it before with the internet and various things where you've got a confluence of technologies. We've got GPS in a phone, you know, these kind of location-based technologies. You're seeing a bunch of Web 2.0 applications for it. You're seeing a bunch of applications all around for it. And I think that the economic engine is very clear. I mean, Google's already said, we think this is a richer business for us than just standard search. You know, because exactly what you said, Merlin, where Applebee's will say, hey, you know, there's an app. We know you like Applebee's fajitas. There's one right around the corner. Wouldn't you like to go now? I mean, I think that's very valuable. Will consumers tolerate it?
Well, and I mean, I think I made that a little bit of a red herring. I'm not obsessed with the ad part of this. What I'm obsessed with.
No, but that will power it is my point. I'm not obsessed with it either.
So I've had this iPhone now for a few months and I use it a lot and I like it a lot and I'm getting more comfortable with it. I still prefer to use, you know, a real computer, like with a keyboard and stuff, but I'm getting used to that. But on the road, I really found myself kind of depending on it. Yeah. At one point, actually, I lent my Nuvi to another family member who needed to go pick somebody up someplace. And so I was relying more heavily on using the Google Maps stuff, which is like, it's pretty good. It's not Nuvi. But it's pretty good. So the problem is, though, if I go and I do a search for like, oh, what was it we were looking for? Some kind of a thing that's a chain. Okay, like, for example, let's say I want to find a Starbucks. If I do a search on Starbucks on Google, it is awesome. I get a bunch of returns on a map at the top. But what it says is like 15 returns for Starbucks, and I can't tell which is which. I don't know which one is near me. And I just think taking that little extra mile and so I don't know if I mentioned it on this show before, but I keep thinking with the SDK, like if I were Disney, for example, I would want to put out with the SDK and make the ultimate like Disneyland application. So I could find stuff like the nearest vegan restaurant and things like that. And I guess I just feel like this is such an exciting way to take the core competencies of Apple's iPhone team and Google's contextuality and local teams and make something that would be really hard to beat on any other device from any other company.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's tightly integrated the way the maps are now. Imagine that map stuff being like to the 10th, you know, power, where you go, okay, and near where I am, like, show me the directions that would be easiest for me to do dry cleaning, buy a big gulp, and drop my kids off, you know, at soccer.
But would you give up so much control over your minute-to-minute decisions too? I'm not even terribly convinced. I'm not even terribly happy letting GPS steer me towards a diner that I have picked out. If I'm going to say, tell Sandy, tell Sandy to return, please, my a set of waypoints that will let me do everything on my to-do list in the shortest time, I'm not convinced that it'll steer me to the points that are going to help me do that, or that's going to give me the best path, or giving me the most useful solution to that.
I guess my point is all of that stuff will be solved, and the fact that this is so powerful and there's such great economic incentive means it will be solved. I think it's very useful. I think Merlin had that kind of moment that at some point everybody has with GPS, where you go, this is fantastically useful.
Yeah, but I mean, I count myself among this group. We so often fall into that trap of extrapolating and thinking, oh, well, here's the ultimate expression of this technology, and it would be great, but in reality, it doesn't really work, and B, it's not a solution that people are willing to really accept.
What doesn't work about GPS for you?
GPS works great. I'm just talking about letting some random anonymous server tell me that, oh, I want you to go to this place instead of that place.
Oh, but anonymous server. It's a really smart server that knows like what.
So you don't use GPS to navigate, Andy?
Of course I do. How is that different? I'm saying that if we were in a situation where I would plug in, hey, I want to go to a diner. I trust the database inside. But I also have a newbie. I think it's the best GPS you can get.
Yeah.
Except for how disappointed she sounds when you do it wrong.
Oh, you're going the wrong way. Recalculating.
But and oftentimes, like if I'm just in an odd part of New England, I'll just punch in, find me a diner, and I'll go to the diner. I trust it because it's just going by the fact that it has a database of businesses with the word diner in it, and it's making a mathematical calculation on which one is closest. When you talk about monetizing where people are going, where people are being recommended to, it has to be an absolutely pure as ivory soap decision based solely on math. I do not want to be steered towards the person who bought an ad as opposed to the person who doesn't even realize that this GPS direction service exists. Right.
Well, that's the same thing people say about search, is I don't want to have paid results intermingled with my search results. I want my search results to be pure.
And what I'm saying is that in addition, there is paid results, and that tends to ruin things. But there's also, again, people who try to game the system by setting up link farms, by making sure that
you're worried about people gaming this.
Yeah, he's talking about SEO, not ads.
I've never heard that acronym before. What is it? SEO?
Search Engine Optimization.
Oh, okay.
But that's gaming, essentially gaming Google.
Well, it's a huge industry where basically you get your hotel to the top of the list by applying a combination of black, white, and gray hat ideas.
The problem that I find, and I find it myself, and I also find it with actual human civilians, is that people will give a certain service X number of tries before they absolutely give up on it. So the second or the third time that they're looking for, I want a down-homey diner, and it sent me to some place that's kind of okay, but you know, it's actually one of four businesses that are owned in this area that have the word diner in them. They're going to never use that feature again, and that's going to be the failure point.
Yeah, but I think that when we look at Apple, I mean, one of the issues with GPS right now, and I think we see it in such an infant, it's kind of this infant zone. Where you know, you don't have any one company having, you know, tens of millions of people using it. And I think that when we start having that, and when you start people have coming in with already the aesthetic of expecting something out of their iPhone, I think the kind of GPS stuff we're going to get is going to be much higher quality. And I also think that I don't feel like I need to think pie in the sky about what's possible. What I know is that there's just going to be a lot of competition. You know, there's just going to be, you know, you can't, if Google always put up only paid ads, no one would use it anymore.
Well, I have a scenario for you. What if Google or somebody says, hey, your phone's free and we'll subsidize your phone service. All you have to do is allow us to put a few ads in there.
I would probably pay for it.
Well, but a lot of people, I think, would say, hey, free phone service.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I think most people would until it reaches that failure point.
What's the failure point?
Again, the point at which I feel as though I feel as though the phone is there to serve the needs of its advertisers, as opposed to serve my needs as its owner.
Yeah, and I admit that it hasn't been done perfectly up to this point. But at some point, I think it's possible to figure that out and do it right.
Yeah. Again, the humans are a weak point in any system. If we just trust the machines to do what's best, this would be a paradise unto Earth. A lot of people would die, but it would be a paradise unto Earth.
The damn humans, screw the thing up. This is the Cylon speaking, I want you to know. Can you do that Cylon voice when you say things like that? So what you're saying is you trust a machine to do it. You just don't trust a human to do it.
Again, I trust a mathematical algorithm to say businesses with the word diner that are the closest in miles to the position that people are right now. When we add things like, well, this person has paid for an ad placement and for that to be bubbled to the top, that's a big problem. It's an even bigger problem when it's possible to again game the system. I'm sorry. I seem to be saying the same thing over and over again.
I know, because Leo's slow and he's trying to get it.
But I'm saying that I guess what I should do is backtrack and simply say that if it works, great, because that's
But that's true of everything.
Just a simple fact that the iPhone, as it is right now, can give me within a certain degree of precision where the hell am I. Just if I'm walking down the street, I know that, gee, I need to turn left on Vassar Street right here. I'm on the MIT campus. Have I passed it, or have I crossed Ames Street yet? It'll give me that answer, and that in itself is really, really valuable. I will use the features, any navigation features that appear inside the iPhone. The question is, will I use it 4 or 5 times? Will I rely on it the same way that I rely on my Nuvi, which over the past three or four years has always given me just absolutely perfectly the answer that I want. It's, a device that serves my needs and not the needs of Garmin, not the needs of whatever advertiser might have been contacted by the marketing department.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true. I can see all these great scenarios where, this all kind of comes together. You know, once you really get how great GPS is, I don't know, you start dreaming about what might be.
I love your mesh idea, Andy.
I think that's a great idea. I keep thinking about the Yellow Pages.
It's like the Yellow Pages is nothing but ads.
There's ads in Yellow Pages, right?
But it's also a listing of businesses alphabetically by some taxonomical thing that makes sense. So it's like, yeah, you can see the big ad for this undertaker, but you can also look at the alphabetical list alongside of it. And I mean, as long as Google doesn't repeat the same mistakes that other companies have made with trying to, or Google or whomever, with trying to overly blend that stuff in a way that's confusing. I mean, an advertisement doesn't feel like an ad if it's what you're looking for. And that's much easier to do at a block level than it is at an IP range level.
Okay. Again, it's possible I'm just being cynical, but I'm just hoping that... So one of the most heartbreaking things is when you see a technology or a piece of software or a piece of hardware where you know they worked really hard on this. And at some point on the whiteboard, this was a brilliant idea. And then at some point, marketing got a hold of it and thought, well, look, why don't we monetize how these search results are delivered? And just for that one reason, this great thing is now useless to...
You're describing a very common thing. And I totally agree with the spirit of what you're saying, which is that nobody likes to feel like they're being played for a punk. And to feel like their participation in something is solely described by their ability to be monetized. And so that's why I think there's like always this balance that you're trying to strike, you know, of trying to find the right mix of what I give away for free, which in Google's case is, I guess, you know, useful search results versus what I think it's when people, like you say, either take it too far. And I like your thing about the machines and the people, because the other thing is that machines can really be stupid too, because if they try it almost like a spam filter, that's a little too, you know, aggressive that, but I think people don't like feeling pumped, and whether, you know, regardless of what it is that's doing that, you're right. You've got a few chances to get that right. And then somebody's not going to waste their time on it anymore if they feel like, you know, you're not even taking their needs into account.
Yeah. And just in case, I want to make sure people know that I'm so totally pro GPS. I had GPS in my car so early that I managed to get out of a speeding ticket because the cop who pulled me over like was so fascinated by this mysterious box I had on my dashboard. He thought it was a Fuzzbuster, and it was an old beater car. Like easily the GPS was worth way more than the car. And I said, I'm sorry, officer, if you say I was speeding, that I was speeding. Unfortunately, my speedometer doesn't really work in this car, so I have to go by the GPS. And then I spent 20, what's a GPS? And I spent minutes explaining how the satellites work and how it does try. How it gets three.
By that time, he forgot you even did anything.
Exactly. It was like, these aren't the droids we're looking for.
No, I love GPS. I really do. And I think every time I use like something new, like the Nuvi, and I see how much better it's gotten, I'm more and more impressed. And I really think we're about to make a breakthrough when it's in your pocket all the time. Maybe it's just something as simple as what you talked about with this mesh kind of traffic regulation or whatever, But I see there's so many applications for this. And yeah, you're right. What if we take out the search, the paid search? Although I think that that's going to be critical to making this economically all happen. But if we take all that out and think of all the possibilities, I mean, just it's amazing. You know, every picture you take is geotagged automatically. You know, people know that you're within proximity. That's what these places and the bright kites all about is finding you in nearby, you know, and it's really quite amazing.
Really is the subtle things I'm looking forward to. I don't care about the iPhone camera geotagging applications, so long as it's sort of maintaining a 10 minute snapshots as I go of where I am. And then when I plug my camera into iPhoto, I've also plugged my iPhone into iPhoto, and iPhoto is now smart enough to realize that, oh, well, look, we have all this track location information from the iPhone that we can then match to these photos I'm just slurping in. Why don't I tag them automatically? That's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good. It's maybe just as simple as that. The only reason I bring in the economic stuff and the search stuff is I think that that's what, you know, frankly, these people are in it to make money. And so if there's a really good model for making money out of it, I mean, Google is just drooling over this. That's why they designed Android. That's why they're giving it away to HTC to make handsets. That's why T-Mobile says by the end of the year, we're going to offer a HTC handset to our customers running Android. And I think the iPhone, that's going to be the competitor for the iPhone. And if Android has, you know, all of these features built into it and the iPhone doesn't, trouble. But maybe that's an opportunity. Maybe Apple's opportunity is to be the kind of the ad-free version of this. Moving along. I hear buzzing.
Hello?
Is that you guys? Is it me?
I don't know. I think it was you. You were moving something around over there?
Oh, yeah, constantly. If you're watching the video, I'm like rewiring as I'm talking. So if I seem a little distant, that's what's going on. We're going to get to picks because I don't see a lot of other stuff to talk about. Any other big stories you guys are following? Oh, wait a minute. Let's see. Yes, let's see. Monday.
There was a new
Apple
iMac.
Did something on Monday. I know they did. iMac. They revved it. Now, I thought it was interesting that they made such the top of the line iMac is 3+ gigahertz. This new NVIDIA graphics card. I mean, it's a hot machine. If it weren't a laptop, it'd be a great machine. But it's essentially a laptop.
I think that, though, I have to admit, though, I think it's officially 4 times faster than the G5 production that we have, you know, production wow. computers we have here. I mean, it's we're looking at actually we're getting ready to get rid of all the G5s that we have in the office or putting them off to being render stations or whatever. And we're looking at literally we need a handful of Mac Pros, but we're looking for a lot of the day-to-day stuff just moving to 24-inch iMacs because they're fast enough to do an enormous amount of work. I mean, they're pretty amazing.
I like these new iMacs. I'm not sure I'd run out and buy them. Are you thinking of replacing the G5s with that?
Some of them.
Really?
I mean, we have a whole bunch. We have 5 or 6 G5s, and we don't need all of them. You know, I mean, we need 2 that can handle lots of cards. You know, so we have these Blackmagic cards that we use for capture.
Oh.
So we need either 2 or 3 that need a bunch of internal
slots.
Cards.
Yeah.
That need the slots. But for after a certain amount of the work has been done. I mean, we do some of the production on our laptops, you know, but the iMac is considerably faster actually than our laptop for
Isn't
most
that amazing?
Things.
But it's a laptop. So, it is kind of essentially a laptop, right? It's a laptop drive.
It is, but it's got, no, I don't think, I think
it's a regular drive.
I think it's a regular drive in there. And it's a little bit more, it might not be a regular drive. It might be something in between, but
you could always boot from a FireWire drive if you wanted more speed. It has FireWire 800.
Or you could be writing to an external drive. Yeah,
right.
You don't even have to boot to it. You could boot to your internal drive.
Right.
Most of the time when we're doing most of our work is being done on external RAIDs.
Right.
You know, so these are all – so you just need something that can power that stuff. And with
I
the
bought
new
the Extreme. You know, when the 2.8 Extreme came out last year, I bought that. And I've been very happy with it. It's a nice machine. Although I can tie it up. Running Visual Hub – to do a lot of conversions
right.
or, you know, it really ties it up. Lightroom, when it's doing a lot of rendering, it becomes almost unresponsive. I do one-to-one
wow.
renders, one-to-one previews when I import from my camera and
right.
it's doing so much stuff.
That'll tie it up for a little while.
Yeah. And it's a beta.
That's what you do overnight.
Yeah. No kidding. But those are big renders. Yeah.
Yeah. So But we've been super happy, you know, with I got my son an iMac, and that's what really started putting me over the,
oh, and they're pretty,
you know, over the edge. And they're, well, they're, and they don't take up a lot of room. We're trying to move to all Intel because, you know, the Intel chips are so much faster.
Yeah.
You know, and it just gets painful when my laptop renders out faster than the G5s do now. You know, so we know we have to upgrade. We've been trying to hang out until everything's been revved a little bit. We're hoping that we're going to see a rev in June for the towers. You know, at WWDC, you don't want to buy something before WWDC if you can avoid it.
You know, what's cool about this is the Core Duo Extreme that is in the new iMacs. You can't get it in the PC. The iMac right now is the only way to get it. The 9100.
And you know, if you're a PC user, you can get a really fast PC. That
right.
Way.
Just get exactly.
And the other thing to notice, by the way, is that you can, you know, a lot of people look at the price of Windows. Oh, I have to spend $330. But some of the third party resellers, the Mac Malls and so on and so forth, they're bundling, you know, XP or Vista or whatever with a Mac installed the way you would do it with an OEM. You know, from Dell or whatever. So you can save money if you really want that PC side of things. They'll build the dual boot for you, or they'll bundle in Parallels, or they'll, you know, all that stuff. You know, they have all those deals,
right?
That are available.
I should correct myself. It isn't. I thought it was a 9100. It isn't. In fact, it's a special chip that Intel, I guess, did for Apple. They've announced it. It's part of the Matavina system, but it's not out yet. They announced it at the developer forum in April last year. Yeah, but so it's kind of a special chip, and Apple's got a deal. This is where you're starting to see the benefit of Apple moving to Intel. And I imagine it was part of the deal was Intel said, and by the way, we'll give you access to our new stuff, you know, faster than Dell and HP.
Well, and because Apple probably can pay a premium for it too, because they have,
that's right,
they have the premium.
Good
they point. Have a premium margin to get ahead.
Good point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to get to our picks in just a second, but it is time for an Audible pick. We thank Audible, by the way, for their support of the show, and I want to correct a misapprehension that I created myself. I was joking around at the end of Twit a couple of weeks ago, and I said, well, I guess that's it for Audible, and then they'll never sponsor a show again. And that was a joke. And I've actually started receiving emails from people who said, well, I'm canceling my Audible account. No, no, please don't. That was just a joke. They're still a sponsor. They love us. They're very happy with us. They even put up with stuff like that. So audible.com/MacBreak. You can get a free book, a good way to get a free book if you've not done audiobooks. We're all audiobook fanatics here. I think all of us are. And the great thing,
I don't
thing,
read anymore.
No, it's so much easier. You know, you there's time when you're in the car, or you don't even have a car, Alex. And
no,
you,
I do it. It's my cable car. It's my cable car.
Do you ride the cable car to work?
I do. That's how I commute.
I'm so jealous.
I'll take pictures for you.
You actually ride the cable car?
Yeah, a little. And what's funny is you build a subconscious little thing where I can hear the cable car goes right by our house.
Ding, 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 ding.
So yeah, so I hear it and I know, okay, I've got 8 to 10 minutes before the next one. And so that kind of is, but you don't even think about it while you're doing it. And suddenly you just have this feeling like I got 8 to 10 minutes before the next one comes out. And so then you just kind of put all your stuff together and you end up waiting on the corner for a minute and then you hop on a cable car and it's about a 12-minute ride into the, and it drops me off about. That was exciting.
Pay no attention to that. So when you're in the cable car and you're strapped in.
I am. I'm always outside and I. And
do
I'm
you hang on the outside?
I don't hang on. I hang on the outside if there's a lot of
tourists, whatever. But, nice way to put it.
But usually I come into the office pretty early, like just when the cable car is actually starting. So usually there's nobody else on the car.
Right.
And on
so
the way
you're
home,
sitting
I'm
on the,
late.
You sit there, so they have a little area on the outside. So you like to sit there.
Yeah.
I just want to visualize this.
By the way, if you're visiting San Francisco, there is absolutely no reason to go on the inside part of the cable car.
And the grip man's in there and he's sweating and it's
not only that. They pack people in like sardines in that area. And I don't understand why someone would pay $5 and then get jammed into the closed area.
Because it's
cold. I mean,
cold.
It has to be raining hard
cold.
Before I'll go inside.
Because tourists come to San Francisco thinking it's in California and it's going to be warm.
Then you walk across the street to Walgreens and you buy the little sweatshirt that says San Francisco on it. Because like half the tourists have one. You know, you just fit right in, you know.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Every time
I love driving up Powell Street and seeing the tourists standing on the corner shivering in their shorts, thinking. Oh,
but what eventually happens is every time you see that little sweatshirt, there's one sweatshirt that has a little San Francisco, imprinted on
right,
it.
Right.
And you're like, you got caught.
$45, like, but at least you're warm.
Exactly. And that's what pays for Walgreens to be right there.
I actually have an Alaska sweatshirt for exactly the same reason. But you'd think I'd be smarter. Yeah. You know, Alaska, cold. Yes. It was.
Exactly.
So anyway, so when you're on the cable car and you've got the little white headphones in your ears, what is it you're listening to?
Well, I just downloaded something. It was actually the first audiobook that I ever bought. And back when it was tape. So I got this, I originally got this about almost 15 years ago on tape.
Yeah.
And then I just got it for my iPod. And it is, it's really great. It is called The Tao Te Ching, a New English Version. And now I'm an Eastern philosophy major, so my background was kind of in that area. But it's specifically, you don't want to get any Tao Te Ching. You don't want to get any Tao Te Ching book, in my opinion. You want to get the one written and narrated by Stephen Mitchell. And it's available for $9.95 on Audible or free.
That's kind of the classic translation.
He actually takes some liberties. You know, he takes some liberties of swapping the Tao from being male to masculine, feminine, and he softens it. It's a very soft, warm translation of the Tao Te Ching. And I have like six Tao Te Chings. So this specific one I think is the best translation. And he reads it and he's very soothing. I guarantee, just try putting it in the car. It's really hard to listen to the Tao Te Ching and be angry in traffic. It's almost impossible. You get caught up. I used to play it while I drove in Denver because it made me not want to kill everybody.
Let me see if I can play. I might try to play a little excerpt of this without having what happened a moment ago happen. Let me see if we can do this without feedback.
I have the technology. But of becoming it, in surrendering to the Tao, in giving up all concepts, judgments and desires.
Okay, now imagine a car is coming at you.
You're surrendering to the Tao.
And you're surrendering to the Tao.
Naturally compassionate. She finds deep in her own experience.
Oh, I see.
The central truths of the art of living.
So this is the by Lao Tzu, who is the which means the old one. It is one of the oldest, isn't it? What is it, the oldest religious text of all?
I don't think it's not the oldest. It gets back into, if I'm correct, I think it's, 500 BC.
Oh,
or
it's
so.
Not that old. Okay.
So it's not that old. But it is as I said, it's just a fantastic, translation of one. It doesn't matter what your religious background is. This isn't really that. It isn't something that you have to be Buddhist or whatever or Zen or whatever to enjoy.
No,
there's
beautiful.
A lot of things that apply to everything. And it's just a very, very great book. And it's very short. It's a lot short little chapters. So you don't feel like you get in the middle of something and you have to leave it, because every 2 or 3 minutes, it's a new one. I think I can't remember the exact number, but it's 50 some. So
the translator's reading it.
Yeah. He really does a great job at it. And so I like having it on my iPod. You know, anytime you feel a little stressed, you just play a little Tao Te Ching and you're like, oh, okay.
I was listening to an ad on the radio the other day for Wayne Dyer, who's coming to town. And the announcer said, and he will talk about the Tao Te Ching. Te Ching.
And more I thought, like the Tao Te Ching. Ching.
I thought, that's apt. No, I thought, I want to tell everybody, it's spelled Tao Te Ching. That's the That's the anglicization of the Chinese. And it's but the Chinese pronunciation is Tao Te Ching.
Right.
Talk about a rat hole, but you got me, I really enjoyed that book a lot in college and had a, took a class, it was called The Nature of Modern Physics, and it was a class.
Oh,
it was,
yeah.
You could call it basically physics for English majors.
Right.
But it's a non-math physics class that like just kind of introduces you to some of the concepts of modern physics. And one of the books that we read is called The Tao of Physics. Did you ever read that?
Yeah, that's classic. Yeah.
So I noticed here that it's available on Audible. So we might mention that one as well.
A double
Tao. So if you've read The Tao Te Ching, double Tao. I always double Tao on 11.
Yeah.
Blackjack joke. It's funny.
21 was last week. Okay.
No, but it's a really great book, and it's just kind of like how these ideas, like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle and stuff, are sort of analogous to some of the concepts in Eastern mysticism, but especially of the Tao. I only mention it; it's a bit of a rat hole, but
No, that's another good book. And by the way, they also have the Tao to Willy, which is Willie Nelson's version of the Tao. I have to say, I've read this. Not quite as profound as the Tao Te Ching or the Tao of Physics. It's, you know. You want to hear a little of the Tao of Willie?
Would I?
Buck teeth. All right, let me see if I can play that. We have the technology. This is Willie Nelson reading this.
Perhaps that's why it's been suggested we add his face to the cliffs of Mount Rushmore and be done with
this
it.
This is the introduction praising Willie.
Hugh Hefner, who was that?
It does sound like it, doesn't it?
For half a century, he's played countless concerts across America and around the world.
It does sound like
his appeal crosses nearly all social.
He had intercourse with him, but he always seemed like a built fella.
That guy's name, are you ready for this, is perhaps the best name in all of broadcasting. Turk Pipkin.
Ooh, that's good. That's got pop.
Hi, I'm Turk Pipkin. Turk Pipkin. You're who? Turk Pipkin.
Okay. Explosives.
Turk Pipkin. Dark Pepcorn. Anyway, Willie does read part of that, and I have to say I've heard it, and it's relaxing. Anyway, so there's three Taos there, depending on your point of view. The Tao of Willie, the Tao of Physics, or the Tao Te Ching, the original. Three good things.
I'd start the Tao Te Ching.
Would you please? Yes.
To figure out what the context is.
Get your foundation.
The Willie Nelson that can be named is not the true Willie, if memory serves.
Exactly.
I'm sure that was some esoteric Tao Te Ching joke, which I don't get. But anyway.
Was it? That's the great thing. You smoke a lot of pot in college and you just start thinking that everything is just an easy, simple, you can understand Eastern philosophy if you just start, you know.
Well, it must explain why there's so many books, the Tao of, because there's like a dozen of these.
Yeah, I think the idea is if you don't know what it means, it sounds a little bit fancy and spiritual.
Right. T-A-O. T.E. Ching. That could be your free book or the Tao of Willie. Or you could, you know, this is the neat thing about Audible. There's something for everybody. And you just don't run out of books. I mean, it's a full-fledged bookstore, 45,000 titles and so much great stuff. Not just books, radio plays, just audio programming of all kinds, including podcasts. Just do me a favor. Go to audible.com/MacBreak. Sign up today. Get your free book. Then decide, because I think you're going to love it. Audible.com. We do thank them for their support of Mac Break Weekly. There he is, Andy Anaka, on his EPC.
Hello again. Am I being heard?
Yeah, it sounds good.
So if I can paint a word picture for you, to my left here, I have a $1,700 MacBook Black that will give like Cylon-like audio. On my right, I have the like $350 EPC with Skype pre-installed, and that's what I have to go with for you.
And it sounds
same
good.
Headset, same everything. Okay.
It sounds great. Hey. Well, now so you know, though. I mean, that's great. You can use the EPC for that.
Yeah, it looks like those of you who work at the Apple Store and at North Shore in Massachusetts, I'll be seeing you in a couple of days.
Do you think it's that? Or maybe it's the USB connector or something.
It must be the connector. I thought I swabbed it out with alcohol, but oh well. Maybe it's a teetotaler. Maybe it might be a Baptist.
Use Jack Daniels or tequila.
I tried that approach last week and it did not work.
I think I
swabbed myself out with alcohol, and now I very much feel like a Cylon.
But weren't you glad you had the GPS?
I was about to say after the past 20 minutes, I think I was pouring the alcohol in the wrong opening.
Hey-o. So, Andy, we're doing our picks. You want to do one?
Yes, I can do a pick. As a matter of fact, I was going to do a callback to a pick that I believe I had several months ago, which was the Amazon Kindle ebook reader.
It's in stock now.
You can actually buy it, yes.
Wow.
It's a very Apple-like sort of thing where, hi, it's great. It's being wonderfully reviewed. We can get you one in just 3 to 8 months. but I've had one since October or November, and I had one of those little moments a couple of weeks ago when I realized that my opinions of the thing had changed for the better. I'd always thought that it was a really, really great device. I always liked it, but I've always seen it as a mismarketed thing, that Amazon should really start selling it as the ultimate Google Reader device, the ultimate blog reader, where it's lightweight, it's a big screen, it has big next and previous buttons on the side of it, and the internet is wherever you are, anywhere in the country, and it's free for life. Because you buy the Kindle, you get free access to the Sprint EVDO network, and you never have to pay for it. But I found that by virtue of the fact that I just have it, and I have it with me, and I travel with it, I have, as to my surprise, I have been buying ebooks via Amazon a lot more often than I thought I would. I seem to now be in the mode where if there's a book that I'm interested in, it's almost become like iTunes, where I will look for it on the Amazon Kindle store first, only because I don't want to be carrying around this big, massive hardcover with me everywhere I go and everywhere I fly for the next like 2 or 3 weeks. If I have this Kindle that I'm always going to have with me anyway, that has whatever 2 or 3 books that I'm working on, that's a device that I can really work with and that I can really have everything with me. And then later on, after I finish a book, when I finished the Houdini book, mm-hmm. I actually bought the paperback because it was good enough that I knew that I wanted to have it on the shelf. I want to be able to reread it and reread it.
Ultimately you might go to paper if you really like a book.
So that's what I might go to paper. I still think that's the default format, yeah. But I'm actually it's been heightened by the fact that I'm probably going to be moving sometime this year. I'm sort of witnessing the big Stonehenge like arrangement of bookcases and thinking, wouldn't it be great if I could read all the books that I have and I enjoy, but I would only have to like carry this like 3 memory cards in it instead of having to call in every favor I've ever been owed in the past 10 years.
Exactly. Yeah, it starts to happen when you start accumulating a lot of stuff. As you get older, it really does become more appealing to get stuff electronically, I think.
I need to make more money so I can finally build that library wing onto the house.
So the Kindle, yeah. So now you had one for review. So you only had it for say a month.
I actually had it for 2 months, then I wound up buying. Actually, I had it for 2 months, and then it was one of those things where I said, "Why don't I just buy it from you?"
Okay. So you kept it,
and I kept it. I voted with my pocketbook on it. And it really is a very, very useful device. I still think that my central reaction still goes. Either you have a Kindle shaped hole in your life that this can spackle really, really nicely, or you don't. Because if you don't lead the sort of lifestyle where you're reading electronic documents and you're reading blogs like a good proportion of the day, you might find it difficult to earn back that $399, so to speak. But for my lifestyle, especially considering that I have to travel so often and I need to be reading while I'm traveling. I had to really elevate my opinion of this. I thought that it was, again, 10 out of 10 in some things, 8 out of 10, maybe 7 out of 10 as a book.
So the Kindle is your pick, and at $400 is about a half an Alex, but I think I agree with you. And I still use my Kindle all the time. I mean, I've been reading a very, very long science fiction trilogy on it. And the fact that I don't have to carry around these big, heavy books is just great.
Yeah, on top of that, I just love the random. Another selling point was the random access of it. About a week ago, it was all over the usual news aggregator sites that someone had come across a backup archive network volume from Infocom, and it had all this email correspondence behind the development.
Oh, I saw that.
Second Hitchhiker, the sequel to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy game, and that made me think about Douglas Adams again, and made me think about, I'd like to read it. Like I read Neil Gaiman's biography, but I haven't. I've never read one that was written posthumously, and without even thinking about it, just picked up the Kindle, did a browse, bought a book, and was starting to read a biography just a minute later, which is exactly the way that the iTunes store is so powerful. You can just basically have this idea, shop, browse, and be in it just 5 minutes later, and also be $7.50 poorer, but what the heck.
No, I think more and more we're going to demand that experience. Nobody wants to get in the car and drive over somewhere to get a book or anything, a record, anything.
There you go.
Yeah.
You risk exposure to the giant day ball.
I hate that thing. It burns. All right. Let's see here. Alex Lindsay, do you have a pick for us?
I do. I have a pick for the iPhone.
Okay.
It's actually a website for the iPhone. And I'm not going to belabor the point, but as many people know, that I've gotten kind of addicted to Twitter. And one of my big complaints about Twitter is that when you actually use their application on the iPhone, it doesn't tell you how many letters. Because my little haiku is that I actually just post 140 character posts.
You try to get 140 characters every time? Exactly. Just,
I think like 95% of mine are exactly 140 characters.
That's called a twoosh. And,
twoosh, yeah.
That's what they call it. So it's called a what?
A twoosh. In fact, there's a site that you can sign up for and follow them, and they'll keep track of your twooshes.
So I was going to say something.
Go ahead, Andy. What is it?
No, I was going to say it'll send you. I had to turn it off because it kept
so annoying.
These annoying messages. Yeah. You tweet like a swan. Yeah. You're 112 tweeters. Like, okay, thank you. I'm not a swan.
I turn it off.
I'm not a Thank you.
It's completely annoying. However, if you're one of those people who writes in 140 characters sentences, then I think you might want to keep track of that.
It is sort of in our nature, though. It's like, or at least it's in my nature as a writer. If an editor says you have 1,200 words, I'm not going to give him less than 1,200 words because I'm just that, like, I'm just that run of the mouthy.
It's like, kind of fun too because there
must be a way to change. If I add a comma here,
right,
I'll have 140 and not 139.
It's a real challenge to get everything exactly 140.
So it's very Tony Shalhoub thing. Go.
I definitely enjoy it because it requires me, you know, if I change this word from this to this, and if I change this to this, and I, you know, it's one of those things that it was hard at the beginning, and now it's just kind of
all right,
automatic.
So you need to sign up. It's tweet140.com, by the way. Tweet140.com. You should sign up there.
So the problem is that the Twitter one doesn't really, if you text message it, you can run over 140. Right. And if you use the Twitter one, it's, you know, it's foobar. So there's another one, a website called twitterforiphone.com. And if you go to twitterforiphone.com, when you start typing it in, it's actually a nicer interface. And when you actually start typing it in, it actually tells you how many characters you have left. I know that seems like a little thing to you, but to me, it's very important. So Sorry?
I'm sorry. Alex, have you ever used Halo? H-A-H-L-O?
No.
Because that'll also give you a count as you go. And it has a really nice iPhone interface. And they're beta testing a new version of the interface that's even slicker.
Yeah, a lot of people like that one, yeah.
H-A-H-L-O.com. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Merlin, you're not going to get in on this?
I love Twitter.
You have no suggestion?
That's all you have to say. I love Twitter. People are so sick of us talking about Twitter.
Well, that's all. That's what I had new this week.
No, that's
I have
good.
Something else I'm working, but I have it's
no,
not
it's
ready
good.
To talk
no,
about.
No, that's good. That's great. Oh, you did. You actually showed a little restraint not talking about your own product.
Well, we talked about it.
Did we talk about it last week? Okay.
Yeah, we talked about it at the beginning of the show, so I didn't feel like I should talk about it at the end of the show. So, but we have new products coming soon.
DV Matt.
It's called DPMAT.
DPMAT
for aperture.
Okay.
Yeah, aperture. And it's been going like hotcakes.
Has it?
So we're very excited.
Good. Yeah. Well, you got a lot of attention because you're the first company to write a plugin for aperture using that new plugin architecture. So everybody's looking at it, saying, "Wow, you can do that."
I think by June we'll be the first one to write three.
Wow.
now that we figured it out, it's we want to get conduit into it. We're working on an HDR toner, so do HDR stuff, and so we're off to the races. We're having a lot of fun
cool.
with it.
That's great. Merlin Mann, you got a pick for us?
I do. As I said, I was visiting with family down in Florida. And, you know, for a long time, I had stopped recommending the Mac to people, really mostly, you know, through the 90s. Because it was, I don't know, it wasn't fun to be a Mac user in the 90s. But, you know, after OS X got more mature, I felt more comfortable. And I don't know. There's all kinds of ways you can sell a Mac. I think one way you sell a Mac is by showing people how fun it is to do stuff. So I pulled out Photo Booth, and my family had uproarious, like, old-timey fun.
Isn't that great?
Like, just playing with Photo Booth.
Yeah.
So first of all, I wanted to mention that I may be about to sell two MacBooks just on the basis of Photo Booth. But cognitively related to that.
By the way, you can't make a Macintosh your pick on Mac Break Weekly.
Really? Oh, this is awkward. Okay. I guess I'll pick Alex's app. There's you can get Ecamm Network is a company that makes different little wacky.
They're the greatest.
Are they the call recorder?
Yep.
Most of us use for Skype.
But it's the first thing that really allows you to record Skype all the time. It's just great. It's a huge.
But have you seen eyeglasses?
No.
It's kind of a weird little funny one-off thing. It's $9.95, which is, I think, 1/70th of an Alex. And iGlasses is a little plugin you install in any application that uses a camera, basically. You get extra control over the settings on how it's capturing. And the way that they sell it, which is really smart, is to, let's say you're in an environment where you don't have a lot of control over the lighting, like your studio, you can make it brighter. So like there's all these built-in sort of combinations of almost like filters in Photoshop. And so you can do separate filters or you can do kind of their presets And so the business use for it is like, okay, instead of having that sort of dreary, low contrast, darkish look that most of us get out of our MacBooks, this can make it really pop. But there's all kinds of like little wacky effects. You can have it kind of swirl through different colors, all trippy. But if you do a lot with your camera and don't want to have to mess around with a higher end one, you just kind of need slightly better performance. For $10, you can get some. It's a pretty nice way to hack on it.
Very cool.
That ecamm.com is the company, and it's called Eyeglasses, and it's $9.95.
Very good. All right,
that's so a great pick.
Yeah, and come to think of it, I think it's been around for a while, hasn't it?
I read about it. My friend Gord, Gordasm, was who I learned about it from. And I just got it for fun. He says he likes to play with, you know, when his daughter and him are playing with the camera, he likes to use it. And so I got it just for fun because I've been doing more stuff with the built-in camera.
Is it using, I wonder if it's using the quartz effects?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. Well, if you go to the page, you'll see that in the little kind of screenshots, they'll show you in a drop down. There's all kinds of little things you can do. I mean, I think the reason most people probably buy this is to, you know, improve the image. But whatever you want to compensate, you can do night vision. I haven't gotten that to work. You can change the white balance. There's all kinds of stuff you can do. So if you're like a hacker, I'm sure you could probably do all this stuff on your own. But it's nice little for $10. It's a nice little package.
Yeah. I wanted to mention that because last week I mentioned OVO Labs Geophoto as a tagging solution. And I got a very hurt email from the author of Huda Geo. He said, well, you know, it's widely considered that Huda Geo is the best photo tagging software. And I had to send him a note saying, you know, I never heard of it. So I tried it. And, you know, it's not as feature rich as Geophoto from OVO Lab. But if what you're trying to do is get your GPS tracking into your pictures, it's the bomb. I mean, it really is a great tool. €25, supports iPhoto and Aperture. And I think I saw it had a Lightroom as well, although it doesn't say it on their website. Another good choice, something to look at if you're a Geophoto user. You should probably look at Huda Geo as well, HUDAH.com. That's not my pick. I just wanted to give him credit because he's been around doing it for a while, and I felt bad. I didn't know about it, so now you know. And then I have to give a little credit to somebody who's on the MacBreak Weekly team, I guess, in a sense. Somebody who tagged something. We get, you know, all the time on our MacBreak Weekly Ideas site, we get picks and suggestions. And this one is kind of fun. I downloaded it. Credit to Cephalopodcast. That's his name. And it's called Chill from Bitnautic. Have you guys ever seen this?
Yeah.
You've seen it?
No, I haven't. But I went and Googled it after you mentioned it.
Yeah.
I think it was making the wacky ambient keyboard noise.
It's kind of, yeah. It's a little application. So I have all these settings on it. I have mood. I could go mellow, more or less. Beats, more or less. Swell, more or less. Let me click swell. I'm going to make it. Should it be like make less mellow? Because you kind of like, you thought it was too trancy, huh? Too relaxed. And then in the mix, I can say, let's bring the melody up, the ambience down. I don't know what pad is. And I can have a heartbeat or I can have effects. Let's turn on both heartbeat and effects. I could choose my key. I'm going to do G major, 75 bits a minute. You're ready to hear my auto-generated music. This is chill. And you can have chill radio. You could choose the song length. I can make it 5, 10, 20. It's kind of like Pazzizz without the talking. And you could save it out to a wave or an AIFF file or MIDI. Here we go. This is every time something different. What are you laughing at? Wait a minute. Is that in there?
No, that's me.
Oh.
No, Leo.
That's
that
good.
Be
that would be good. Can we add the laugh? Wait, I need a button for laughter. You don't like it? Come on. Okay.
I'll say is this. I don't like movies in which Philip Glass is doing the soundtrack. What if that were my life?
this could be the soundtrack for your life. Should I press the swell? And then it's kind of live, so you can have it do stuff, change stuff while you're... Oh, there was a little swell.
It's like every computer graphics demo from 1988 I've ever heard.
Okay, it's a crappy pick, I admit it, but it's free.
I think it's kind of fun.
I'm sorry. I'm being very rude. I'm
no, sure so. No, no.
That's just
no.
one person. This one person's opinion.
You know, I think you know, if you wanted to relax,
I'm seeing chrome spheres morphing into a checkerboard.
Okay, different one. This is going to be F major. See, now it's really different.
Oh, that's better.
You like that better?
Yeah. Bring up the heartbeat. That's sweet.
You like the heartbeat?
I love the heartbeat.
Okay. How about the effects? I'll put the effects in as well.
It is 80 years after World War IV.
Yeah, exactly.
A lone warrior strides the wasteland that once was downtown Chicago.
Where's the pizzas? So, anyway, there's just a silly little gadget that you can have in the background. But I think from now on, I'm going to have this running in back of all my podcasts. Maybe wouldn't it be funny if I just kind of went off like that and just started doing that? Would you guys desert me?
I think you could probably compose a kind of an ad hoc soundtrack for the show. That would be like things are going bad. It's like something's really about to go down.
Okay, this could be something more upbeat. This is happier.
That heartbeat's not good. Gotta take that out.
Take the heartbeat out. It sounds like something's...
We're losing him! Get the crash cart! Stat! It's 20 milligrams of heavy! Get the board!
See, I think of all the people who hate this the most, at least, Andy, you're inspired by it. It moves you.
It has touched me in that special place, Leo.
Anyway, I gotta go pee. So we're gonna wrap this up.
I want to see that on the website in big font. I gotta go pee now, Leo Laporte.
I tell you, well, it's just, you know, this is the first recording in the new studio. We had a few technical glitches, but we did stream it on video. Not the three cameras, specially lit, super duper. Somebody said, why are you doing your show from a cigar box? And okay, I admit it's a little brown in here, but we'll, you know, we're going to decorate it up. Anyway, I want to thank you guys for putting up with all the technical glitches and the late start and everything. Andy Iannocco, it's great to talk to you at the Chicago Sun-Times. I think this should be a part of your shows. From now on, we're going to make you have a special sound effect just for you.
I'll bring my own infinite Starfield with me wherever I want, just for you, Leo.
Yeah, makes me crave that. Also at the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, CWOB.com, Merlin Mann's new show, which is really much better than this one.
Oh, you
look nice today. I love it. At youlooknicetoday.com. And who did the silhouette logo for that? I love that.
I found that on the iStock photo.
Really?
Yeah, we wanted something that really suggested the existential pain of being a young person.
It's a little kid with a little flowers behind his back. Yeah. And it's a silhouette. It's really, I really like it.
And to reflect the tone of the show, it's very gentle.
And not a bit ironic. YouLookNiceToday.com, Scott Simpson on it, as well as Lonely Sandwich and Mr. Man. And of course, his website is still 43folders.com. I see it everywhere. Everybody loves 43 Folders. Vote for him in the Hot or Not contest at TVWeek.com. Did you vote for him, Colleen? Oh, she voted for me. I pay her salary. She better vote. And of course, Alex Lindsay is at the Pixel Core, pixelcore.com. And if you want to hear the Pixel Core podcast, including This Week in Media, which is excellent, new one just came out, Gear Media Tech, we're going to have a good one, a couple of good ones from our...
Yeah, we have at least three or four of them. And we've got a pile of Gear Media Techs on the way out. And we're still running NAB ones in MacBreak.
Oh, yeah, let's not forget the MacBreak NAB shows, yeah. And I can't wait to see Pat Grosswet of lightpanels.com. The video of him talking about how to do lighting, and it's great that it's video, because he's showing us as he's talking about what he's doing. It's just really great, and I can't wait to see what he comes up with. And a great site, lightpanels.com. And that's it. Everybody may now micturate. We'll see you next time on Mac Break Weekly.